Meeting has come to order. Thank you. The Ag Finance and Policy Committee, as you see, we have a pretty full agenda today, and we're going to get into it in just a second. I just want to make an announcement. You may have seen on Friday that the RFA declared an emergency in terms of livestock diseases in Minnesota. And talking to Commissioner Peterson, what this essentially did was open up another loan program to livestock producers who are being hit by a different kind of disease in their turkey and chicken flocks, and also to dairy producers who may be impacted by the strain of bird flu as well. So their funding situation is adequate. So although it did sound kind of dire, things are being taken care of by the department, and they're working that program very well with our state's livestock and poultry producers. So just wanted to let people know that. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, we would support that as well, that it's an appropriate emergency. I think it would be important at maybe a future hearing. I'm hearing rumors that the veterinarians that work for USDA APHIS that will be dealing with bird flu or dealing even with that may have been laid off on Friday. And so that would be very concerning if that has occurred.
Thank you, Chair Hansen. Again, we'll get the meeting to order here. And first up, we are going to be having a presentation from, let's take care of the minutes. And I apologize for our meeting last week that we rushed through things quickly and they weren't quite checked as well as we thought they were.
Those have been correct.
Now, today's minutes are the corrected minutes, are the minutes from our last meeting. And the from the first meeting we had minutes for, since nobody raised their hand to say that we had a couple of names spelled incorrectly, we apologize for that. We had another person who was taking minutes that day. That has been corrected. The names have been corrected, one on our side, one on the DFL side. So those are corrected. We don't have to go back over and do those minutes again. So again, I will entertain a motion to approve the minutes from our last meeting of February 12th. Representative Harder, would you take a look at those minutes closely and approve them if you see fit?
Thank you, Chair Anderson. I have looked over the meeting minutes, and I'll make the motion to approve. Thank you.
Motion's been made to approve. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
And disapprove, same sign. The minutes are approved. Thank you. First up today, we have a presentation from the organization called MEALC, Minnesota Ag Education Leadership Council. And following that, we have a bill presentation for them as well. So welcome to our first testifier today. Identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Anderson, members of the committee. My name is Sarah Dornick. I'm the executive director of the Minnesota Agriculture Education Leadership Council, or also known as MEALC. For a quick refresher, MEALC is a 16-member legislative council that started in 1997 to promote and expand agriculture education opportunities across the state. We are a small staff of two people, myself as director and Carrie Schwab as our program coordinator. And the groups that we work with, so I interchange agriculture, food, and natural resource education, or AFNR, and ag education, so you may hear me use both. But we work with four groups, mostly informalized AFNR education. So school-based AFNR is in our high school and middle school, so 7 through 12. We serve about 45,000 students, 220 programs in the state, and about 340 high school agriculture teachers. We also work with our post-secondary AFNR partners at the Minnesota State System, as well as the University of Minnesota. So those are anything but people becoming ag teachers, so if they have an agriculture, food, or natural resource type degree. Our agriculture teacher preparation programs are at the University of Minnesota Twin Cities, University of Minnesota Crookston, and Southwest Minnesota State University in Marshall. And then our farm business management program, which I know you're going to hear a presentation about shortly. For our budget, we do have our operations in a small piece of scholarship program that is in the U of M base budget, so it actually goes through the Higher Education Committee. It's not part of but the two following pieces are appropriations from this committee, our Grants and Special Projects Initiative, which is a baseline funding of $250,000. This last biennium, we had a $100,000 increase of one time, and I'll talk about what we did with those funds. We also, what we call FBM money, but it is more than just FBM. We have FBM mentor programs and professional development that is $2.25 million. We're housed at the University of Minnesota, which is in state statute that we're employees there, and they serve as our fiscal agent. Obviously, you can see the big blue item is our FBM funding, so we are meeting your directive that a priority for that funding goes towards our FBM challenge grants. The other item I would just show you is that green slice. That is our operating. So we send 92% of our funds that we receive back out to the state. So we are pretty lean, but I like to say we're efficient and effective with our money. Before I talk about the money, we do spend a lot of time in engaging our partners and sharing about AFNR education, and we're the statewide leaders that help bring groups together to solve problems and challenges and really move AFNR forward. One item coming soon, it is printed, it is at the office, but you will be receiving our 2030 AFNR education blueprint. So this is our strategic plan for those four categories that I showed you, focusing on strategies to reach these goals the goals of students, programming, and instructors. So it was a lot of work. We started with listening sessions across the state this summer, and then we had committees this fall, and now we're actually ready to share this. So look for that in your mailbox soon. Getting to the funding of this group, as I mentioned, this last fiscal year we had $350,000. We are a pass-through the Department of Agriculture. The majority of it is spent on program grants. So we have two programs. One is called Common Funds. Those are for statewide projects. The other are strategic initiative grants, which are either local school districts or organizations. And then the second piece, we really focus on our teacher recruitment and retention. We really think you can't have strong AFNR programs if we don't support our teachers there. So digging a little deeper into our program grants, we had $300,000 from you. We invested in 33 projects, so that's 33 school districts or groups that received funding. So we were effective in trying to expand our reach as far across as the state we could. Five of those grants were common funds, so those statewide impact. 28 projects went directly to schools. As you can see, 80% were for those school-based programs. We also did 20% with our post-secondary programs. One of them, for example, the University of Minnesota received some dollars to improve their agriculture mechanics equipment that our teachers are training on. So we try to connect it together. And then 10% is on ag literacy. For example, it was with Minnesota 4-H. So they had these agriculture ambassadors that are doing ag literacy projects in school, but connecting it to our formal ag education, trying to help those students see that maybe being an agriculture teacher is a future career for them. And so trying to bring them and connecting with the ag ed department. Most of the funds actually are going for classroom equipment, which, as you can expect, is the most expensive thing past staff. Obviously, we expect the school to cover the staff fee, so we are trying to help equip them with what they need to be awesome teachers. And so we have classroom equipment and then greenhouse garden really were the largest pieces that we used. And I'll just read you these fun. You can read these on your own, but people were supportive of our grants, both starting new programs or helping programs we have and then starting new programs. Teacher recruitment and retention is another big strategy of MAIL-C. Again, we've kind of become the leader of that State Teach Ag Results, or STAR. It's a national program. MAIL-C was one of the pilot states for that program, and MAIL-C serves as the chair of our statewide committee, working on different strategies to recruit and retain teachers. So a lot of teacher recognition and celebration. We do a T-Tag signing that's like a sporting event at, you know, where they sign at the FFA convention, Future Agri-Science Teacher Symposium. We bring students from all four surrounding states plus Minnesota, so five colleges together, one, trying to convince them to stay in Minnesota and teach here, but also just start building their network. We do have a small scholarship program. We support an internship program, and then we support mentor programs and professional development, which is later in the presentation. I wanted to specifically talk about the one-time appropriation funds. As I mentioned, half of it went towards the grant program. Right into that pot was used in the same way our grants are given. We used two small pieces, one for Teach Ed Communications. Carrie and I are not communications experts, and so it was great. We partnered with a group called Vantage Point to really work on finding our market audience, increasing our social media content, our newsletters, trying to reach more people, both students, but also people for second careers to think about being teachers. And we have a new website that just is launching. Then also we use a portion of it for our college internship program. We have had, this is a long time program, but it has been great to have that partnership between public dollars and private dollars. It's easier to go ask for industry support when you already have a base of funds. They like to see that there's always already investment. And number two, it was great to have these funds already in place because we could start recruiting right away in the fall. So we are in competition, of course, with our agriculture industry folks for interns. And so if we can get out in front to say, hey, here's an opportunity, don't go to industry, stay in your major, stay here having a practice teaching experience in the summer. It has been successful. So thank you for those funds. Our largest funding is the $2.25 million, which I'm not actually going to talk too long because FBM is right behind me and they're going to give you a deep dive into FBM. But I wanted to just address our Challenge Grant program. The colleges, there are seven colleges that have farm business management, and then they receive it's basically a pie, and those colleges that invest more in FBM get a larger piece of the pie of the Challenge Grant funds. They get 50% of the grant right up front. They get 25% upon a progress report, and then they get the remaining money meeting five of the eight parameters. Parameters are around instructor support, student support, professional development, outreach, and administrative engagement, I guess I would say it. So we're really proud of that program. And there's the second program is actually new, so I wanted to dig a little deeper into that one. Our FBM instructor capacity building grants, what we call them. We have done instructor grants before. Previously, it was for adding capacity, so adding instructors. We've also done the last biennium, we did a targeted instructor grant for specialty crops and urban FBM instructor. This time we kind of left it more open. We said, what do you need that could help your instructors be better at their jobs and to increase their capacity? So we did have, you know, one instructor, he's by himself. Alexandria has one instructor, and he's like, I'm not going to add another faculty, but if I could get my students all the same software, so I'm not learning like four different software programs, I can be more efficient with my time, and then I have more students join the program. So someone like him was a little different, but then a lot were on recruiting and professional development, as well as the majority were on that mentorship transition. So we know as our instructors leave and retire, a new instructor comes in, FBM is very personal and trying to make sure that those students stay on. And we've found a lot of success with mentorship and transition funds to help help the retiring person come back and support the new person. Then the last piece of those funds are for mentor program grants and professional development. Again, teacher retention is really important, and so we work on both of those two programs. There's funds for school-based, post-secondary, and farm business management, so they have different grants. And the last piece is evaluation, something to look forward to. It is not completed yet. We'll be doing a 10-year study of the FBM Challenge grants, but we won't know till the last data comes in after this end of this fiscal year, but we'll be sharing that with you as soon as we have information. So that was a lot. Mark only gave me 10 minutes. I don't know how long it went. Sorry, Mark. But happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Dornick, for your presentation. Do members have any questions? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Director Dornick, you know, so for the last few years, we've had a lot of discussion about grants to nonprofits, grants to entities, and we set up the grants management process. So does MAALC have to follow the same rules going through the Office of Grants Management in terms of accountability as that we have set up in the last couple years?
Representative Harder, President Hansen. As far as I'm aware, yes, no one's given us a directive that we have to, but we, through the Department of Agriculture, we make sure that what we're doing is proper. We did also attend the Office of Grants Management had a webinar this summer, I think it was, and so we made sure that we were in attendance and following the same thing. Most of our grants aren't large enough to reach the threshold of some of the extra steps. I think it's $50,000, and so our largest grants go to the university and MinState, and so pretty safe. I mean, they are technically nonprofits, I suppose, but not the same, I think, that were some of the concerning areas.
Thank you, Ms. Dornick. Representative Hansen, anything else? Any other members have questions? Yes, Representative Abadji.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you. I just wanted to know if you could dig a little deeper on the types of students and schools where you're at and, like, more of the general areas around the state of Minnesota where you are and kind of how deep across the state does your program go?
We are all over. So we, the largest, of course, are rural schools. We are in about 60% of school districts across the state. So there is room for growth. We do, our largest growth is seeing is in the metro area as well as our northern schools. More kind of for different reasons. One for the metro is the interest in food and where our food comes from and to give students more just opportunities. And then in the northern part, part of it is a staff and a financial decision. We have a more flexible license, and so we can teach everything from food to natural resources to ag mechanics. And so the license is beneficial where they can cover more of the current technical education areas. And so that's where we're seeing our most growth are in those two areas. In our metro, we're in about 30 schools, seven county metro when I say that. We've seen additions in Crookston and Mankato, Rochester. I know Representative Smith, there is a program in Rochester as well, and in Duluth too. So some of our outer state metro areas. And then, of course, the Southwest is our largest. Pretty much every school in our Southwest corner has a program.
Great. Representative Badgey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So do you have any specific programs in the urban core or just the seven county metro?
Great question.
Go ahead.
Badgey. Yes, so we are, there's a program in Minneapolis. It just restarted. They tried to get off the ground and it was during COVID. And so a virtual class is not great for hands-on course like ours, and then that teacher ended up leaving. She went to Duluth to teach ag. So they were a year off looking for a teacher. They do have a program now, just started. St. Paul has been very established. They actually, they kind of do it different. Minneapolis has one program, the students come to it. In St. Paul, they're actually at, like, different schools, and so they have four programs in St. Paul. So Humboldt, Highland, Como Park, and then the Owl School.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Now for the
All right, thank you. Any other members have questions? Seeing none. All right, thank you. Our next item of business is House File 711. Chair Anderson, would you like to move your bill?
Thanks, Madam Chair. Yes, I'd like to move House File 711 before the committee today.
Chair Anderson moves House File 711. Members, this bill will be laid over at the end of the bill hearing. Chair Anderson, please present your bill.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Interesting questions about the reach of ag and ag education. Great question. I was doing some looking over the weekend. It was too cold to do much of anything outside back on the plains of Minnesota. But and they talked about FFA, which is kind of an offshoot of ag education, more for high school age kids. But we've seen just a phenomenal growth of FFA chapters in Minnesota. A couple of years back, there were about 185 chapters statewide, and today we have over 230 FFA chapters in Minnesota, and many of those in the metro. I've seen some of the St. Paul kids really getting into ag and ag education, so it's just great to see that being spread down all over the state to a lot of kids, a lot of interest about where their food comes from, and these programs do a great job in that. But again, Madam Speaker, Madam Chair, this appropriation, this bill provides funding for the grants programs of MEALC. And MEALC, I've been on the board over the years for on and off the board. And, they do an excellent job in providing grants and promoting ag education. We're always looking for more ag teachers in Minnesota. And they do an outstanding job in promoting ag and offering scholarships for college students to go into the program, staying in ag education, because a lot of ag students can be picking up jobs in private industry. They could make more money than they could teaching, for example. So it's a difficult job trying to find enough people to go into ag ed. And again, I just say MEALC does an excellent job in that. And with that, Madam Chair, I would move to lay my bill over House File 711, providing this needed funding for MEALC these next 2 years.
Thank you, Chair Anderson. We do have two testifiers, and so the first one is Sarah Dornick, Minnesota Agriculture Education Leadership Council. Go ahead. Thank you.
Thank you.
Members, today we're asking for committee support of HF 711, which includes a funding increase for MALSEA's grant and agriculture education projects budget. MALSEA would like to focus these additional funds continuing in the two areas to increase grant funding and support for the initiatives around recruitment and retention of agriculture teachers. As you just heard, MALSEA's grant programs are focused on providing access to students through starting new programs and improving the quality of our current programs. In the previous fiscal years, the funds requested by applicants are conservative and the needs have always been greater than we can support. Every year, there are also excellent projects that MALSEA is unable to fund. Each time we're not able to fund a project, there are opportunities missed for providing access and innovative experiences for students in AFNR. To help you compare, MALSEA is using the same dollar appropriated in 2007 to now in 2025, supporting approximately 40 more schools, 100 more teachers, and 21,000 more students. We believe this is a reasonable request to continue the important work to reach every student in Minnesota. In addition, MALSEA would like to utilize some of the increase to support our work around agriculture teacher recruitment retention that was mentioned in the presentation. Without a strong pool of teacher candidates, we cannot continue to grow our reach of AFNR programming. Although we've made significant strides, we want to continue the work that was started in the last biennium. We know we are effective in utilizing our funds, and the additional dollars in our grant program would make a substantial impact for more schools across the state. The original appropriation has made a significant difference in moving AFNR education forward. However, this request is to keep up with inflation and the growing demand for AFNR education programming the past 18 years. Thank you for your time and consideration to further support MALSEA. I'd be happy to answer any questions about MALSEA or the bill specifically.
Thank you, Ms. Dornick. Next, our next testifier is Hunter Peterson, Minnesota Farm Bureau Federation. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Hunter Peterson, and I serve as the Public Policy Specialist at Minnesota Farm Bureau Federation. We are a grassroots general farm organization representing over 31,000 farm and ranch, family farm and ranch members statewide. I'm here today in support of House File 711. Farm Bureau strongly supports the Minnesota Agricultural Education Leadership Council and their work to promote ag education. As was alluded to, through its variety of programming, which ranges from partnerships with youth development organizations like FFA and 4-H to internship opportunities for college students considering a career in ag education, MALSEA helps drive our industry forward. Investment in MALSEA has paid off in the past, and we believe this investment will continue to pay off for the future of agricultural education across Minnesota. Our organization is grateful to Chair Anderson for his steadfast support of ag education and for bringing the bill forward today. Thank you, Madam Chair, for the hearing, and I ask for the committee's support.
Thank you for your testimony. Any questions from members? I have one here. Representative Hansen, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Anderson, just to be clear, so you're asking for $1 million in additional spending on top of the base, is that correct?
That is your... Representative Hansen, yes, we're asking for the increase, not a half a million.
A half a million
over the biennium.
Chair Harder, Representative Hansen. So we have 250,000 in our base, so we're asking for 250,000 more. So over the 2-year biennium, yes, it'd be a half a million.
Half a million.
Ken Savory has a comment. Oh. Go ahead. Did you have something to say on that, Ken?
Chair members, I was just going to say I agree. I agree with the testifier. That is the correct base of $250,000 each fiscal year. This would double the appropriation moving forward.
Thank you for that. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So $500,000, half a million additional spending in the next 2 years. Is that correct?
That's correct, Chair Hansen.
And I'll just caution, if we have a slowing economy, it might be a little hard to have additional money.
This is where we thought we would start, yes.
Okay, are there any other members that have questions? Is there anyone, any member in the audience which would wish to testify for this bill? Anybody in the audience? All right, well, seeing none, House Fire 711 is laid over.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
The next item of business is a presentation from Farm Bureau Business Management. Mr. Olander, please come to the table, introduce yourself, and proceed with your presentation.
Good afternoon. For braving the cold, thanks for being here. Identify yourselves and proceed with your testimony today.
Thank you, members of the committee and Chair Anderson. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. Just a second as we get this queued up. My name is Keith Olander. I lead the Northern Center of Excellence for Agriculture for Minnesota State College and Universities. And Tina is going to introduce herself in just a minute when she takes over. We're just here to share a little bit about farm business management. Just some background on that as it precedes the bill that will be coming forth to the committee. I think most of you are aware from your committee last week, you're getting a sense of what economics are like in agriculture. Minnesota State Farm Business Management is an education program, operates out of 7 colleges within our system. Just a few things about it. It's 7 decades old, and sometimes that can be a positive and that can be a negative, but let's talk about farm finance in 7 decades. There's a lot of resiliency in that. This type of education does not occur at the college. It occurs at the place of the farm, but it's very focused, as you can see on the slide, about the farm family goals. Furthermore, the farmers that we survey, and I'm going to show you just one result of that, they have a high satisfaction of high level of satisfaction, which again comes back to the 7 decades of strength within that. And as we understand agriculture and farm families, as things happen in decades oftentimes. We cannot change soil health in a day. It takes time for that. It takes time for transition. Furthermore, our ages, somewhat unique, 18 to 84 is what currently is enrolled. About 30% are beginning farmer. So they're not necessarily young. They're just in their early stage of farming or less than 10 years of experience. Again, as I stated earlier, we have 7 colleges engaged in this program, 65 faculty, and they're led by the Centers of Excellence that Tina and I are privileged to lead. Furthermore, it is one-on-one, student-led. We're talking farm finance, very intricate detail to the farm, and therefore needs to be something that's a high level of trust and integrity in that data and in the program, and always focused on farm financial management around that. The other side of that, because it is one-on-one and on the farm, it does pose some financial challenges for colleges to operate, and that's a little bit what we're going to talk about today. Furthermore, it's at the site of business, as I already talked about, but the student goals and time frame, as we think about things like farm transition, those are very individualized types of arrangements. But furthermore, just trying to determine break-even, particularly as we think of today's agriculture, livestock agriculture is probably what I would classify in the ability to make a little more profit, certainly coming out of 24, whereas crop producers, not in that boat at all. They're actually struggling a great deal. And so therefore, you have this tool called FinPAC that feeds this all together. And the unique piece of that is all 65 faculty, all 3,000 students will be utilizing that software to produce FinBin. And you might say, as a legislator for the state of Minnesota, what value does this beyond the farmer? And if you have not ever been and visited FinBin, I encourage you to do so. It is the largest enterprise data set on the globe. Are, as policymakers here at the state and at the federal government, they use that extensively. It's very reflective of the USDA numbers, but the piece of that is it can be tailored to figure out specific different types of adoptions on the farm. So think about the FinBin, and that's a value to the state of Minnesota that's been used for years. Here's where our students are located, simply designated by the colors on the map. You can pick out the 4 that are most dense. It says 2,317. That's how many producers actually completed the final exam, if you will, in FBM. And for us, that means that there's an analysis for all farm expenditures. Here's a survey piece of a little bit of what goes on. Record keeping, and Tina's going to touch on a little bit more of this. I think I would point to this third-party analysis or this idea that no faculty show up with anything to sell because of education-based, and that develops a great amount of trust with the student. Okay, let's just spend a few minutes here, and then I'm going to pass it off. Not to overdo the data, but please appreciate the fact that farmer income from year to year is never, ever consistent. Furthermore, let's talk about 21 to 23, we earn a significant free fall in the markets. This blends all farms together, and I put a green in there for 2024 estimated. We will finish that up in about a month, but we anticipate another 30% decline in farm income. Now, as we just take a look at a few things, what does this education program have to do with any of this? Well, first of all, our farmers tell us, and this is what they told us. So 18 to 84, about $17,632, they figure that over the years they gain either because they're able to reduce input or increase income based on the education outcomes. That's their numbers. So what I tried to do here with my squigglies is to produce a green line on top of there to say that this program that you invest in already through MEALC already adds value of about 2% in actual cash to that. But let's just look at a time like it was in 13 to 19. When we were in those times, farmers need to be resilient. So it's the idea of how do we mitigate expenses. And that's where the education program can be very dynamic and focus specifically on that for the farm family. Or let's talk about from 2012 to 13 or from 21 to 23. When you're in market free fall, how do you mitigate the differences in what goes on the family farm? And the key to our program, that the other side of that I would point out, is that you're able to benchmark. In this case, we're seeing this last year, most farms lost money. But it's a matter of where do you rank in that process of losses that really can be critical, and then how do you gain going forward or pick out the pieces that are there. And finally, as I wrap up, this idea of what happens in profitable times in 2021 and 22, tax planning is absolutely critical. And that's how do we set the stage for what would be the next free fall in market. As unfortunate as farming is, we always have the ups and downs, but that's part of the process and how we go at that. So hopefully I've been able to share a little bit of how we come broadly at this education program, both from a farmer perspective, but utilizing data like that to help guide policy for this committee and for our friends out in D.C. So with that, I'm going to turn over to Tina, if we can, Mr. Chair.
Welcome, ma'am. Identify yourself and proceed.
Good afternoon, Chairman Anderson and members of the committee. Thank you for giving me time to share. My name is Tina LeBrun, and I am the director of the Southern Ag Center of Excellence. But more importantly, I've spent the last 16 years as an FBM instructor in Southern Minnesota. Although my role has evolved most recently, I still serve many farm families across Southern Minnesota today. What I want to focus on today is the good and the need that is surfacing from our Minnesota farmers enrolled in farm business management programming. We have found an educational model that works well here in Minnesota. Currently, there are 65 instructors serving across Minnesota who can work with anywhere from 35 to 45 farms on average each year. This results in education delivered on farm in a real-time manner, driven completely by the farm students' needs. The core of this education is built by and through relationships. And as I have been working on transitioning the past 16 months from instructor to director, I have seen firsthand the power of relationships in this profession. This model not only serves the student, but as the image shows here, it becomes a three-legged stool between the FBM instructor and college as well, which is truly the essential piece to making the model so successful. The instructor is allowed to deliver unbiased education to the student, driven completely on the farm's business needs, backed by the local college's support. This, in turn, allows on the farm business needs backed on the local college support, this, in turn, allows core educational moments to surface through the data-driven decision-making method, which is the foundation of FBM education. Next, I want to speak to the FBM instructor point of view. As an instructor, your main role is to advocate for the farmer, which essentially becomes advocating the profitability of each farm student you have enrolled. Instructors need a great deal of support in the ever-changing ag environment. I have listed just a few topics that instructors should have a knowledge base in when they go out onto the farm, beginning with financial literacy that ranges from benchmarking to global economics, commodity marketing, farm service agency programming, crop insurance program, farm accounting practices, nutrient management planning, conservation, and climate smart practices are just to name a few. We also see many farms struggling with successful business transition. The family dynamic has a great impact on students' needs. Nearly every farm we serve is touched by farm transition, whether there is a younger generation starting up or an older generation navigating their way out of farming. Often, FBM instructors can be dealing with both sides of the farm transition realm. Off-farm obligations can add another dynamic, as many farms have a spouse or possibly the farmer results to working full-time off-farm. That can add levels of challenges in successful farm transitions. Finding experts to support the day-to-day operations on-farm is becoming more challenging in our rural communities. Lenders, accountants, or other professionals that a farm needs at their advisor table can often be a revolving door or hard to find. the FBM instructor is often the mainstay and trusted partner when it comes to navigating the farm business. However, challenges, or rather opportunities, that we are currently experiencing as a statewide educational program begin with what I refer to as the three R's: retention, faculty retention, replacement, and recruitment. When faced with retirements, it can be very challenging to find replacements and then provide the training they need to retain new hires. The MILC Challenge Grant, which we spoke about this afternoon, has really aided in this challenge, and I will talk more about that in a second. The unique program structure of our FBM program requires additional education and support on our college campuses. FBM instructors are mostly off campus, working in rural communities where college administrators might be unaware to the footprint and history Minnesota FBM carries. That is where Keith and I come in to serve often as program facilitators. This goes back to the success of our current state model. Consumers are evolving the story into a more transparent view of where their food comes from, and that will take continued effort from those that support and educate our farmers. A successful path for both consumers and farm producers, but it takes time and effort on behalf of our FBM instructors to help our farms understand the financial pieces that come into play with evolving marketing to meet consumer demands. As I mentioned earlier, the key to our success with FBM has been the MILC Challenge Grant. This funding supports has allowed us to close the gap on program costs between the colleges and Minnesota FBM programming. Without the funding, I can safely say that I would not be in this seat today. And for that, I want to thank you for supporting the gap on program costs between the colleges and our Minnesota FBM programming. My favorite part of the Challenge Grant is the accountability it provides to all of those involved. If you think back to that three-legged stool image that I shared earlier, the MILC Challenge Grant can be seen as the seat to the stool, as it is the glue for the FBM program model. The parameters set by the grant funding enforces you to take a look. Maintaining credentialed instructors lies on the college requirement, where maintaining current FBM students' credit level lies on the instructor. And completion of the farm financial analysis, which Keith alluded to earlier, falls on the farm student and instructor. Imposing these parameters not only enforces all to maintain status quo, but also shed light to the new audiences and new college administrators that come along. This is so valuable, especially when we are currently moving into some challenging times on farm. So what is currently happening on farm? Current conditions are certainly entering a reduced profitability environment. Interest expense is a reality for most farms right now, as many are in need of implementing operating notes that are at rate levels some of our farms have not managed with before. Farm inputs are minimizing profit margins, which is a spiral effect to ag industry and our local rural communities. There is a lot of uncertainty as we face unpredictable times ahead, with the federal government's executive order freeze affecting farmers already, even though it wasn't supposed to. Yet the diversified farm, livestock, dairy, value-added producers are standing more profitable, while our crop farmers are on the trajectory for continued reduced profits as cash flows are in the red. Farm succession planning and farm transitioning needs are overwhelming barriers that are abundant and stressful for many family farms. Keeping the farm sustainable for two generations to remain profitable in economic downturns is an obstacle, while planning to protect the farm's legacy can often be overlooked. Lack of experts, experienced ag lenders or accountants, etc., in rural areas can be a large hurdle, as farm transitioning takes time and is best successful with a strong team at the advising table throughout those transitioning years. Oftentimes, the FBM instructor has the role as a sounding board for our farm students, and the top three issues that are surfacing on farm at the moment is finding a workforce able to meet the farm's needs, downturn in the farm economy, and farm transition planning. Where do we start? How do we see it through, and how do we keep the farm family's legacy alive? I want to thank you for your time today and your continued support of the Minnesota FBM program. If there are any questions, I can address them at this moment.
Questions from members of either Mr. Olander or Ms. Hunter. Representative Vang.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the presentation. Mr. Olander, if that's amazing that 30% of the students you have are beginning farmers. I know they probably don't have or own land yet, so how do you guys work with them on that, on teaching the course to them?
Mr. Olander.
They don't own land.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Vang, thank you for that question. Certainly when it comes to beginning farmers, there are some obstacles out there. So it's either going to be something that happens occurring within the family structure, how do we transition that, or if we partner with our friends at the Department of Ag, and how do we link up people that are wanting to enter the farming industry, but there isn't somebody in the air situation. So then partnering people that are either going to work with them on the job, right, as a, coming in as an employee and then assuming ownership. But it's just trying to create various models that are out there. The other thing that we've seen, too, is if we didn't get into this a lot, but commonly starting off, you're seeing 1 to 2 off-farm incomes, and they start out with a lease and trying to lease both, you know, some sort of a share in equipment and then a lease on land. It is very difficult, but as I mentioned earlier, we see this in decades, and it takes that time to really start to generate in that first decade this access to land, as you know the cost that it is today. But those are some of the ways that I would say, either through family, or we've got a situation where we're just trying to link people together that just are not known, or we have a situation where there's off-farm income supporting initial purchase or lease and then growing from there.
Representative Vang. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my question has to do with operating loans. And, you know, when you're looking at the history with farm business management, do most farmers have their operating loans solidified at this point in time, or are they in the process right now of working on their operating loans?
Mr. Olander or Ms. LeBrun, either one of you.
Yes. Thank you, Representative Hansen. Right now is key to locking in those operating notes. I think it does start in the December timeframe, but through April, May, we'll see a lot of renewals coming up. So we are in the heat of that moment right now.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So if the loan officer is no longer working there after Friday, what does the farmer do when the person they worked with for the federal government on the loan is no longer employed?
Ms. LeBrun, you want to tackle that one?
Thank you, Representative Hansen. That's a very good question. That's reality of what we're dealing with, and that's, they call the FBAM instructor. At that point, that is their first point of contact. And so luckily we have a web of relationships around that we can hopefully navigate that situation to some sort of solution, but that will absolutely be a hurdle that will take a team effort to combat.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, in rural areas with FSA offices, do you have any data on how many FSA employees are a spouse or a partner or have a farming operation as well? Maybe their federal job is providing the health care and the other types of services to make their business profitable. And if they're no longer employed, do we have any numbers on folks who may be impacted by firings that worked at local FSA offices?
Ms. LeBrun or Mr. Olander?
Mr. Chair, thank you, Representative Hansen, for that series of questions. A couple things I'd respond to. The actual data, no, we don't have the data on what the numbers are because this is all in process of moving. We do have a really good working relationship with Farm Service Agency. So as we move through some of the crisis level things before, when I say that, not necessarily we've had layoffs before, but we've had an overabundance of loan demand. So then we begin to figure out shifting offices, and then they're either at the state level working with us on some of that or seeing it locally within that regard. Yeah, our data will tell us that the average farm, there's going to be $45,000 of off-farm income. So if I categorize the average farm, there's already off-farm income. If it's specific to a federal situation, it is completely devastating because often that comes with the benefits of that. And we're going to see some of that perhaps as we go forward in the next 60 to 90 days. We learn exactly how this plays out in both of those situations.
Thank you. Yeah, that situation just developed over the weekend, and yes, it's concerning, very concerning. But also I'd add that there are other sources of lending, ag country, for example, banks, rural banks as well. But the FSA does play a big role in farm financing. Well, thank you for the testimony. Any other questions from members? If not, we have a bill to be heard. And before we do that, Representative Nelson, introduce us to the young fellow who is sitting by you at the table.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And sitting over here is, tip your hat up a little bit, bud. This is my retirement plan. no, this is Zebediah Nelson. He's my youngest, and with President's Day and no school today, he eagerly hopped out of bed, helped me with chores this morning, and we headed down here to finish out the day at the Capitol. And then tomorrow morning, we're going to be going home, and we're going to be loading up cattle for the that's the diversified part of the farm. And we'll be loading some cattle, right, getting that ready for market on Wednesday. So, this is it's my son. Happy to have him here. And you know, I've got another Pine County member, a little bit younger, in the back row over there. So it's good to have him here as well. So one of the testifiers' children. So,
very good.
So I do have a bill to come before the committee, and so it's. I will move before the committee HF 653. And
go ahead, Representative Nelson. Let's hear your bill.
And so this bill, it's in the talking about mail C. It is putting increasing $750,000 each year under the AGREET to for these challenge grants, and so that will be. The base funding is in the rest of the bill, but as we've heard before, this is for the FBN portion of the MALC, and they will be funding, you know, what we've just heard the great testimony of here before. As we see this, whether it's in farm transition, farm planning, all of that, and being able to, fund our FBN program and... You know, the students that are in it, they do pay a portion of the tuition, but trying to make sure that this, you know, that the tuition isn't a barrier. You know, as you saw, there was quite a large number of them that were, really beginning farmers. You know, had a little less experience than maybe some of us. Some people start out about 9 years old farming, getting that experience and having this opportunity to have the someone professionally really look over and help make decisions. And, you know, it's a challenging time, you know, hearing from across the state the challenges that farms are seeing in their finances, and having that, you know, a second look set of eyes to be able to look over them and be able to challenge them in their farm process and their, you know, their economic planning, not only economic, but just the whole scope of their farm. So... I'll stand for any questions.
Any questions from members of the committee? If not, moving on to your testifiers. Again, Mr. Olander, go ahead.
Thank you. Committee members, Mr. Chair, House File 653, and thank you, Mr. Representative Nelson, for carrying this bill. I would just add one, I've already testified, but one comment is this program access. Whether we talk about on the federal level, we refer to them as underserved producers in Minnesota. We have the Emerging Farmers Office, so that's one group that we very happy to have a, what we call a sort, but really start to identify what are their financial and economic needs that relates to our education base, certainly in specialty crops, urban agriculture, and then we think of our traditional farmers as well. And so the idea behind these grants for the college support is to continue to mitigate the tuition there so that we don't have an access problem as we go forward. Certainly as we think of the downtimes of agriculture, that's when our program is needed the most, but unfortunately it's one of those things that the farmers have a tuition piece that they've got to chip in on that as well. Thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Wallander. Next up we have Hannah Barnhart. Step up to the table, identify yourself, and proceed with your testimony. Welcome.
Thank you, Chair Anderson and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Hannah Bernhardt, and I run a diversified direct market livestock operation in Finlayson, not too far from Representative Nelson. I also serve as the Pine County Farmers Union president. And from my own experience and on behalf of the Minnesota Farmers Union, I'm honored to share my strong support for additional funding for farm business management. When I started my farm, I knew how to rotationally graze and to care for livestock, and I also felt confident at marketing because of some previous job experience. But I'd never even looked at QuickBooks, let alone applied for a business loan. I was in my third year of farming, hobbling together my records and notebooks and spreadsheets when I first worked with farm business management. I had no idea what to expect, and as a beginner, I know I would not have understood the value or felt I could afford farm business management had I not been given a scholarship through the Land Stewardship Project's Journey Person program. But at the end of my very first meeting with a farm financial advisor at my farm, I felt a huge sense of relief about my finances and the decisions I was making. We hadn't solved every pressing question, but just having an expert to talk to who had seen all kinds of complicated financial situations and was unfazed by my operation made me feel really secure that we would figure it all out. In the years since then, I can't imagine not having an FBM instructor to help me evaluate my financial standing and also stay creative in exploring other sources of revenue. So for instance, he's helped me make the hard decision to move away from my least profitable enterprise. He's encouraged me to expand on my strengths in agritourism. And last year, he helped walk me through the overwhelming process of hiring my first employees. I also know farm business management to be adaptable and responsive to the needs of all farmers. So several years ago, my instructor invited me to speak to the annual FBM staff meeting about the unique needs of direct market and diversified operations. And FBM immediately responded by working to hire new emerging farmer instructors and use grant money to start an intro to farm business management program for other direct market farmers. So in closing, I can't express enough the benefit of this program for beginning and experienced farmers alike. And I strongly support funding to expand the hiring of instructors with experience in specialty crops, land transition, and mental health. Farming is inherently stressful because there's so much you can't control. And I've actually asked my instructor if he ever feels more like a therapist having to listen to all of Farmers Money's anxieties. So I really appreciate Representative Nelson's focus on rural mental health and know that it will allow farm business management to continue to serve farmers well. So thank you for the opportunity to testify, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Ms. Barnhart, thank you very much. Questions from members? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and maybe this is a Mr. Savory question on just how much is this additional spending over the base?
Mr. Savory?
Chair and members, the bill itself, HF 653, includes the entire appropriation for the AGREET program. This specific clause that Representative Nelson is talking about is on line 2.9, it's clause 3. The base for the appropriation for mail CS's current law is $2,250,000. This would increase that by $750,000 each fiscal year, so biennially an increase of $1.5 million.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm assuming we're laying this bill over, waiting for a forecast and looking for the future. Is that correct?
That is correct, Chair Hansen. Yes.
And then just finally, Mr. Chair, so, you know, with the disruptions that are occurring in agriculture, we may need to revisit things that we've been doing over and over year after year to look at what are the immediate needs dealing with the crisis that's at hand.
Any further questions? Representative Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is on the bill itself. So if there's a, is this where I should ask this question? It's my first time in a bill hearing under your leadership. So I'll ask this question. Just a couple clarifying questions, and this is getting laid over. So these may be questions that we can deal with offline or as we get closer to a budget bill. But I noticed under the Forever Green Initiative funding in lines 219 through 224, it requires a report to the chairs and ranking minority members of the legislative committees about this particular program. And that's a unique thing added on. None of these other areas of funding, including ones that are much larger, including the 33% increase. So I'm just kind of wondering why that particular program and maybe not others have that requirement around it or some sort of reporting mechanism back to the committee.
Representative Nelson, I could comment if you...
Yeah, if you want to go ahead and comment.
Well, that's not the focus that we're looking at today on this bill. We're looking in on the funding for the programs we talked about today. And again, this is a starting figure, and the language is all new language in the bill, as you see. So it's subject to change and modification. So, Representative Nelson, any further comment?
No, there are periodic reports that are come back to the chair, throughout the year, and this is one of them. So,
any further question? Representative Smith?
Yeah, that's fine. I just noticed that not in the other areas of funding. This secondary question I had is more specifically on the Farm Business Management Challenge grants, which are wonderful. Thank you for your work. My specific question is in farm transition planning, obviously incredibly important. My question, maybe some background on this, is when we hear figures about like the average size of family farms, there's a large difference between what data tells us is the average family farm, which is 388 acres in Minnesota, and then what the median size of a farm is, which is 130, which tells me the difference between those two figures is there's a couple of very, very large farms that are skewing those numbers. And maybe I'll just put this in the form of a question. Does this program provide some sort of guardrails where funding here isn't going to those larger farms rather than small family farms that are struggling with those actual planning for the next generations? Does that question make sense?
Representative Nelson or Mr. Olander?
I'll start with the answer. I don't know what the definition in Minnesota, but I think federally the definition of a farmer, if you have more than $1,000 worth of crops or produce sales in a year, you're a farmer. So that... that can be pretty small. It doesn't take, it's about 2 dozen eggs right now, and you've reached that. But it doesn't take a whole lot to reach that. A farmer, it's probably more accurately would be described as dollar sales than, acres, but I think I'll turn it over to Mr. Olander.
Okay. Mr. Olander?
Sure. Appreciate that question, Representative Smith. So just so we're clear, there's no funds that go directly to the farms out of these pieces. This is all part of the program. Because we are a public program, those that wish to enroll and pay the tuition necessary to engage at the level that they want, and I say that because they do have different rates or different, the more tuition they buy, the more they can get out of the program, right? So we do not have the ability to deny anyone access to that. You are certainly correct when it comes to a larger farm might have several owners that take risk within that operation and then become multiple students in the program. We have those scenarios. As opposed to 130-acre farm, as you quoted, might just have a situation where it is just a single owner, a couple, whatever the case is that you're working with in that regard. So we do vary that the best we can to be able to do that, but we do not have the ability to deny access of our program to anyone because we offer it through a public education system.
Representative Smith?
That was great. Thank you for that testimony.
I might add that the farmers actually pay tuition to be in the program as well. One more testifier, but one quick question, Ms. Barnhart. You said you had livestock. Any frozen water this morning or anything?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I had to go out this morning, unchip and open the water for all the cattle.
Yeah. This weather is really a challenge for those that have livestock. So good luck and keep it going. And good luck to all the farmers. One last testifier, again, Mr. Peterson. On this bill, if you want to step up to the testifier table, identify yourself again and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Once again, Hunter Peterson with Minnesota Farm Bureau, here in support of House File 653. I guess I would just say that the Farm Business Management Program really does improve farmers' business management skills, and it really does save family farms. About 2 weeks ago, I was talking with one of our members who is an FBM instructor, and she told me right now she's working with about 50 farms, And of those 50, she could right now make 5 of them cash flow, which I think just shows how difficult times are for farmers and agricultural markets. But moreover, I bring this up because, you know, FBM instructors, they do incredible work, but they are human like the rest of us. And so, you know, they take on that emotional toll and the stress of the farms they're working with, kind of as Ms. Bernhardt alluded to, with her FBM instructors perhaps sometimes feeling like a therapist. And so, you know, continued funding, increased funding for this program will help ensure that, you know, these instructors have a reasonable workload. It's going to be key to help managing their stress on the job and preventing burnout ultimately. So stability of and longevity for these faculty members will keep the FBM program strong and preserve more family farms in Minnesota. So thank you, Mr. Chair, for the opportunity to voice support for the bill. And, yeah, thank you.
Question from Representative Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe to the bill author or Mr. Olander. So since I'm new at this, you know, just looking at the language, the lines from 2.11 to 2.13 and awarding the grants, MALC shall prioritize funding for faculty with expertise in farm transition planning, rural mental health, and growing specialty crops in urban areas. Can you give me a breakdown of all the previous fundings? How have you granted out? How has this been granted out? How has it been divided? Has it been, you know, through the three areas here? Has it been, you know, 33, 33, 33, or how has that been divvied out? Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Olander.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Lee, thank you for that question. So if I go back to perhaps in my earlier slides, you can look in there. It comes back down to the family goals and what they're going after. What does this farm family want for the next year and for the next 10 years? Is it farm transition? Then I would say we allocate 100% of those dollars as it relates to their education to that effort. Is it under urban agriculture and where they want to grow a diversified business? Is it under crop production? Does that help you? When it's granted out on a per faculty basis. And then our job as center leaders is to make sure those faculty are professionally developed to handle multiple subjects. And then in some cases, like i.e. robotic dairies, we have specific faculty that are really professionally developed in those areas or specialized. So we want, the idea is what is the student's goal? And then that will drive what the subject matter is in education on the farm. Thus, then the challenge grant will focus in that area. We don't want to be directing the farm family. We want them to tell us where are your areas of goals, and that will tell us what are the outcomes in terms of business management that they need to achieve.
Thank you. Follow up quickly because we are getting a little bit behind schedule. So go ahead, Representative Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe, you know, just a comment then before so we can move on. You're going back to Representative Smith's questions about reporting. I think it'll be good to get a report on the previous funding and how that has been, you know, depending on the farmers, but it'll be good to know of all the funding that we have gone out, you know, how many of that has gone to farmers showing interest in, you know, specialty crop in urban areas and the other areas too. And I think that will tie into, you know, one of the future presentation that we're going to hear here around rural mental health. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
We'll note that. Thank you very much, Representative. And we'll move on now to our next presentation. Thank you. Representative Nelson, final thoughts on the bill.
Thank you, and I would encourage your support, and thank you for the opportunity today.
And with that, House File 653 is laid over. Next up on the agenda is a presentation on a very timely topic on mental health. We have two testifiers who do wonderful work here in the state of Minnesota. As they make their way to the table, whoever is going to go first, identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Okay. Thank you, Chairman Anderson, members of the committee. My name is Monica McConkie, and I'm one of the two legislatively funded rural mental health specialists who works with farmers and ranchers in the state of Minnesota. For those of you who don't know me, just a quick introduction. I grew up on a farm in northwestern Minnesota in Mahnomen County. Grew up in 4-H and FFA. It's good to see some blue jackets here in the crowd. The farm is currently a fifth generation farm with my son working with my brother and parents. And I live outside of Detroit Lakes in Becker County. I've been doing work in the mental health field for 30 years this year. I'm a licensed professional counselor in the state of Minnesota, licensed by the Board of Behavioral Health and Therapy. and I started working in this program when the program was doubled, I think, and we added an additional person in 2019. So I've been doing this work since 2019. I wanted to give a brief snapshot of the work that took place in 2024. From my perspective, the most common presenting problems that arose in the farmers and ranchers and farm family members that reached out to me, stress, of course, in general, depression, anxiety, relationship issues, farm family member conflict, especially during transition and succession planning, as well as substance use. Driving causes, when we look at what's happening and we identify the root causes that drive those presenting problems, as we've talked about here already, many of those are those uncontrollables. The weather, natural disasters, commodity prices, the sheer workload, lack of workforce, issues with various regulatory agencies, relationship issues when you're working and living with family, and legal issues. Now, before I get into showing numbers, I just wanted to make this a little more personal and show you an actual email, of course, with identifying information redacted, but this is an email I received from a farmer a couple months ago, and he kind of sums up, I think, what Ted and I see all the time. Struggling with alcohol, there's a family involved, and then he goes on to say, I would say the last 10 or so years, farming has been more difficult for me than any of the other years before. I've always thought of myself as being more optimistic in the past, but in these last few years, I feel more uncertain of the future. We've had some roller coaster years. We have had a few years of extreme drought in combination with extreme wet conditions. We've lost crops due to flooding, drought, hail, and wind, all in the same growing seasons. As time goes on, I find my attitude changing, not for the better. And of course, we set up a time to talk. But this is just kind of a snapshot of a lot of what we see. On the next slide, this current slide, this is really, when I saw this, even though we hear these things, to see sheer numbers was really a shock. And this came from the Minnesota Department of Health in cooperation with the Department of Ag, working together to really look at, we talk about farmer suicides being higher than that of the general population. And so they worked together to draw out those farm suicides. And you can see the top dark blue line are male farm residents. And when we talked about those, I think Keith Olander showed the slide of the really difficult years between 2013 and 2019, and you can see how suicides peaked among our male farm residents and our female farm residents. And you can see in 2021, going into 2022, we are seeing those increase again. In 2024, just a snapshot of the number of client sessions I had was 652, and that includes individual sessions, couples, families, children, multifamily groups, especially when they are struggling with transition planning. And then calls and emails that came through for people looking for help, for people in the ag sector, from family members, was almost the same, 650. In addition, I provided 55 presentations and trainings in a variety of different topics and events. I do a lot of suicide prevention trainings, QPR and Safe Talk. I meet with rural behavioral health, medical providers, pharmacists, and talk to them about agricultural competence. Like, what are the stressors weighing on our providers so when you're serving them, you can better meet their needs? And you can see the list of other trainings. And then in closing, I also facilitate a virtual farm suicide loss group. So this group is for family members who have lost loved ones to death by suicide in our state, and they are connected to agriculture, so we come together monthly. Actually, tonight is our next group, and they support each other in their journey of grief. And this is my contact info if anyone would like to get in touch with me. And again, I just want to say on behalf of myself and all the farmers that I work with and their families, we appreciate your support of this program.
Thank you, Chairman. First of all, I think I'd like to talk about why do we do what we do as opposed to all the clinics in the state? Why don't we just use those? So I thought today I'd talk about the fact that we do many, many, many unique things. For one, when they call us on a hotline, we answer. And for two, there's no cost to them, so we don't have to worry about giving them diagnosis. And if we don't have to give them diagnosis, our paperwork is far, far, far less. We travel the state. We go where they are. And we address issues that are basically farm-related. And the farm-related issues now are so much more difficult than they were even 30, 40 years ago, because we have different things like women. Women on the farm now do a lot of things that they didn't do in the past. Forever, a man did his stuff outside and he did the farm work and she did everything inside, and that was how the systems were. Now there's a lot of issues between husbands and wives because they do something that they never did before, which is the books. And if they do the books, they have something they didn't have before, and that is an opinion. And if they have an opinion, they're going to give it. And so all of those things can create stress. Also, we work with 5-minute questions. If somebody calls, if anybody in this room called either one of our numbers, we would answer it and we would give you the answer. I know that if you're trying to find a therapist, you're not going to get one to answer you a question. They're going to set up an appointment, and that might be 2 months from now. So we are there and we are available. We're also very well trained. I worked for FEMA for a long time and did disaster trainings. And when we look at the issues on the farm, the number one thing that we see is the diversity of issues. If you're a different type of farmer, if you're a big farmer, if you're a small farmer, they all have different issues. And if you're going to be a decent therapist, you have to understand what those differences are. It's because if you don't understand what those differences are, you're going to have an awfully difficult time answering their questions. It's an honor to work with farmers, and their stress levels. When you talk about stress, anxiety, and depression, which everybody understands, I want you to never forget this one statement. If it was so easy to identify stress, anxiety, and depression, why are there 100,000 books written on stress, anxiety, and depression? So it isn't that concept. It's your stress, anxiety, and depression. What can you do to lower that, to help you to go forward? It isn't a concept. It isn't in a book. It's a personal thing. And we deal with those personal things every day. So I'll just leave it at that because I know you're short of time, and I'll open it up to questions.
Thanks, Mr. Matthews and Ms. McConkie. Question from Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the work you do. It's very important. You know, having been on the committee for a number of years, and I see the title is Rural Mental Health Specialist, and I think there's been a discussion about whether the program is only for farmers or for rural residents.
And I think in the last meeting we had, there was a data presented of tribal members, rural tribal members, having an extremely high suicide rate. And I'm just wondering, and I have a follow-up question too, but is there outreach working for tribal members in rural Minnesota to provide assistance through your program?
Mr. Matthews?
Do you want me to answer? Do you want to answer? We don't have time. That's the truth. We are really, really booked. The issues right now are so immense that our phones are ringing constantly. And to go out and do more would be impossible for us. And I appreciate the and I've had a ton of support from this group here. I've had a ton of support, and Mr. Anderson has always been very supportive of the rural mental health programs. And it's because in his area, I have worked with some of his people, and he knows what the results are. And that, to me, is the key to it. What do we do, and how do we do it, and is there results? And we can show that over and over and over again. And thank God we don't have a lot of paperwork.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then diving into the ag area. So we, you know, agriculture has changed since I was on the farm, and you have employees and you may have workers. Some may be undocumented, some may be documented, some may be perceived as being undocumented. And in the current environment, there may be fear of making the call. How do you provide service to farm workers? I understand the farm owners, but how do you reach farm workers, and are you reaching people who may be reluctant to make a call in this moment?
Thanks for that question.
Ms. McConkey.
Representative Hansen. I don't currently have farm workers on my caseload, but I have worked with farm workers in the past, and the referrals come many times through the farmer or the ag connected groups that are working with that farm. So Farm Business Management, Minnesota Dairy Initiative, groups like that. If there's concerns among farm workers, they will give Ted and my information as a resource. But yes, lots of fear. I just gave a presentation on stress management it was a dairy conference, and there were a number of dairy workers there. And when we were talking stressors, it came out, you know, loud and clear that the fear is, you know, what does the future hold for us?
Thank you very much. Any further questions? Again, thanks for the presentation. Representative Agbaji.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I kind of just wanted to follow up on a little bit more. I guess maybe this might be a question for Mr. Savory, but how much funding is in this program already?
Mr. Savory?
Chair and members, there's an appropriation that goes through the Department of Agriculture called the Mental Health Grants Region 5 Development Commission. And the base for that is $520,000 for the biennium. So that will be the base that committee members will work with kind of moving forward.
Representative?
Thank you for that. And so I guess with the $525,000 then over the course, I guess I'm a little bit concerned. I understand we have issues with mental health across the state in a variety of areas, but I'm a little bit concerned at the idea that we can only concentrate on farmers and not residents in rural areas, particularly our, you know, tribal members. I think that's very concerning to kind of just hear that we just don't have time for them. And so I would really want to get a better sense of understanding of how the funding can better be used to ensure that we are trying to spread around the services as much as we can, also understanding that we do have a mental health crisis across the state. But I would just be interested in kind of the ideas that you guys have to try to address those issues for other residents that aren't just farmers, including farmhands, including children, family members, tribal members, everybody who lives in rural areas.
Ms. McConkey.
Chairman Anderson, Representative. So our understanding of what we have been tasked to do is to provide counseling and support services to ag producers in the state of Minnesota. Some of those ag producers are in tribal communities and are Native American, and I definitely have worked with those folks. So I think, you know, maybe that's a discussion if we need to look at the verbiage in the program. It's been called the Rural Mental Health Program, but I know the expectation for Ted and I is to focus on people who are working in agriculture. And I know there are many programs in rural areas specific to other demographics that are at high risk for suicide, per se. But yeah, I think that's a clarifying question.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Chair Anderson. And I, Representative Igbaje, I know, you know, and thank you for your answer about, you know, really clarifying that it's, you know, this is the agriculture. I know working through in the construction trades, you know, they're looking, I mean, there's a lot of those that are rural, but, you know, their construction trade is really kind of looking at the model that we have in agriculture and how do they fit that into theirs. You have a lot of young men that are in construction oftentimes and, you know, can make rather rash decisions in a short time, and they have a high suicide rate as well. So they're looking really trying to duplicate that, and I think it's a great model that works, and, you know, there is a mental health crisis all across the state, and I think it's, you know, each prospective area kind of has to look at that and see what works for their area. So thank you, Chair Anderson.
Thanks, Representative Nelson. Seeing no further questions, and I would just add that to expand the services that they offer is going to take increased funding because they're at the max right now. So that's maybe discussion for another day. But again, thank you very much, Mr. Matthews and Ms. McConkey.
Thank you.
Thank you for your work. Moving along, we may not have enough time to get to the last item on the agenda, which is Second Harvest Heartland. We apologize for that. We'll see how it goes here the rest of the way. But next up is a presentation on our county fairs. Andrew Dewar, our first testifier, welcome to the table and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Andrew Dewar, and I'm here today representing the Minnesota Federation of County Fairs. And I appreciate the opportunity to testify today. I'll offer just a brief history and overview of the funding that county fairs and county ag societies have received from this committee over the years, and then I'll turn it over to the next testifier to give some real-world, on-the-ground examples of how this funding is used and why it's so important. First, Minnesota's county fairs are operated by quasi-government entities called county ag societies. And county ag societies and county fairs actually have their own chapter of Minnesota law. It's Chapter 38. And Chapter 38 grants these county ag societies their formations and powers. And with those powers, the state tasks these county ag societies with holding an annual county fair. All 87 counties have a county ag society. And there are a handful of counties that actually have multiple fairs. Think the geographically large counties. There are a few of them that have multiple fairs. Probably our largest geographic county, St. Louis, will have one down in Proctor, one up in Chisholm, just because of the vast size of that county, and there are a handful of others. So as you can imagine, these county ag societies with the feet and the task of putting on a fair, the resources that they use to put that on, there's three really main buckets of resources. The first is through sales that county ag societies make directly at the county fair. I think admissions to the fair itself, grandstand events, parking, concessions, things like that. Most county fairs also receive some aid through the county itself, though not all. Most do, and that really varies to a wide degree. And that's where we'll see sometimes different sizes for different fairs. It depends on a lot of times the ability and the budget of the county that the fair resides in. And then, of course, the one that we're here to talk about today is the state funding for county ag societies and county fairs. And there are three funding streams from the state that go to county ag societies. The first one I'll just touch on briefly because it's not in this committee's jurisdiction. The county fairs or county ag societies have received legacy funds through most of the existence of the legacy amendment, and that's out of the Arts, History, and Cultural Heritage section of that bill. So I won't touch on it today, but hopefully we'll see Representative Vang and others later this year to talk about county fairs in that committee. And then there are two funding streams that are in this committee's jurisdiction. The first is the Agri grants, $1 million each year. That's really been around since the existence of the Agri funds. And those grants are used for the promotion and preservation of agriculture at the 90 plus county fairs. And those grants are overseen and determined by the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. And one thing I think is somewhat unique to the way that these grants are administered through state statute is that when a county ag society submits a grant to the Department of Agriculture, the department determines whether or not that grant is valid and fits in the spirit of the statute itself in your budget. But then the department takes all the grants that are accepted and then evenly distributes that money out to make sure that the funding on this line item in this committee's budget gets to literally every county in the state that submits a grant that's accepted, of course. The last funding stream that's also in this committee is called premium funds. These are cash funding, cash awards that go along with ribbons at the county fairs, and the purpose of that is really to lower the barrier of entry for people that are participating in various events at the county fair, especially when you're talking about showing and presenting livestock. There's a lot of cost to that, and these premiums certainly don't cover that cost, but it does help lower that barrier of entry economically for people that want to show animals and other things at the county fair. And I will say with the premium funds, that's also prorated in Chapter 38 in a way that makes sure that even the smaller fairs get a good portion of that. I'll just touch on the formula really quickly. It's the first $750 that a county ag society requests. It's 100% covered. The next $750 is $80, the next $750 is $60, and then anything over $2,250 requested is covered at 40%. And that's all prorated. There's a $474,000 appropriation in the statute, and it doesn't go beyond that. And there's always more demand than there is funds available for this, so then it's prorated down from there. So you probably heard enough of the technical aspect of this from me. I'll close before I turn it over to the next testifier just to invite all the committee members to contact your ag society for the fair next year in your counties. Some people have multiple county fairs in their districts. And I counted last week. I've been to 32, which sounds like a lot, but it means that I've only been to about a third of them in the state, so I'm always happy to help facilitate that as well. With that, Mr. Chair, I appreciate the opportunity and happy to stand for any questions.
Thanks, Mr. Dewar. We'll wait for questions until our next testifier has spoken. Go ahead, ma'am. Identify yourself and proceed.
Good afternoon, Chair Anderson, and to the committee. My name is Jen Penzenstadler. I am here representing Minnesota Federation of County Fairs. I am the secretary for Chisago County Fair, and our family raises Hereford cattle and swine. In surveying our county fairs, I came up with a list of projects that we've been able to do with the Agri grant money. We have done cement repairs, sidewalks for easy access for strollers, wheelchairs. We've gotten hand washing stations to keep the public healthy. We've done building repairs, lighting, electrical upgrades for safety for the kids who are showing livestock. We've added ventilation systems, fans for animal safety, livestock pens, agriculture displays for public in teaching them the ways of the agriculture community. One big thing that most of our fairs have started to add is ag education centers. 2 years ago, we started our own ag education center. It's called Little Ag Ventures. It started as the tiniest building on our fairgrounds and is now the biggest building on our fairgrounds. This allows us to speak to the public, give them information about dairy farms, bee farms, all kinds of farms. It gives us the opportunity to explain to them where chocolate milk comes from, the difference between a cow and a bull, and where their bacon comes from. Our county recently received news that we're going to be losing yet another dairy farm that will bring our county down to two dairy farms. The grant money has given us the opportunity to keep our agriculture heritage and tradition by allowing farmers to share stories and their history, educate the public on agriculture, and bring awareness to where their food and products come from. It also strengthens and gives us opportunities for our local economy to put people in touch with local farmers that may be selling their goods directly from the farm. The Ag Center at our fair is one of the busiest buildings around, and so we like to have that opportunity to educate the public. These projects would not be possible without the AGRA funds, especially for a small fair like mine where we don't charge any admission to get in. With that said, I would just thank you for your support.
Thanks, Ms. Penzenstadler. Questions for the testifiers? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I have a couple questions just in this. As we're providing direct cash, a county ag society, do they pay property taxes on their property where the fair is held, or is that tax-free?
Ms.
Go ahead.
If you okay. Mr. Penzenstadler.
Everybody has different scenarios that they come from. Some county fairs don't own their grounds, so they're constantly maybe moving their fair or renting from other fairs. Our specifically, we do not pay property taxes, and we own our fairgrounds.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is there like a summary of that info somewhere? Is there a compendium of who does what?
I don't believe so.
Ms. Penzenstadler? If not, we can hopefully, Mr. Dewar.
Well, Mr. Chair, and Representative Hansen, I don't know the answer to that, but I can work with our association to try to get that to you. I do know that when you talk about who owns the fairgrounds, I've been told somewhat anecdotally about half it's by the County Ag Society and about half it's by the county. With a couple of exceptions, the Northern St. Louis County Fair in Chisholm is actually on state land. That's the only one. And I believe there's one that's on municipal land, but I'm trying to remember that one. But it's roughly half and half, County Ag Society and county. But as far as who pays what for property taxes, I'd have to get back to you on that.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And on premiums, and I support, thinking of second grade and you go get a blue ribbon, that's a huge deal. But I'm wondering about, so let's say you have a champion steer and you have a ribbon auction, right? So you can auction the ribbon off and then you can auction the steer off. And then those are educational expenses, or that income is educational income, and then let's say you go to the state fair and you win a trailer, brand new Featherlite trailer if you get the grant. How is that? Is that like that's income, or is that educational income or educational expense? And we don't have to have the answer right now, but I just this whole picture of premiums I think is important to look at.
I would just add, at our county fair, when they have the blue ribbon auction, whatever the item sells for, I think the 4-H'er gets to keep a fourth of it, and then the rest goes to the county itself to cover some of their expenses with the fair. So the 4-H'er doesn't get the entire amount. It's spread up between the 4-H student themselves and the 4-H club to pay expenses going to the state fair and things like that. Any other questions from members? If not, thank you, Mr. Dewar. And Ms. Penzenstadler. Last presentation of the day, and again, we apologize. We're going to have to reschedule with the Second Harvest Heartland and appreciate their patience with us today. Last up on the agenda is Green Seed. We have a couple of testifiers there as well. First up, I believe Mr. Ziegler. Identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chair and members, good afternoon. My name is Sam Ziegler. I'm the president of Green Seam. I want to thank you for your invitation today to appear before you. Green Seam, for those who don't know, is a nonprofit organization to promote our region as a world-class food and agribusiness epicenter. At our core, We want to focus on economic development, targeting the full supply chain, which consists of retaining and expanding existing businesses, creating and attracting new businesses, talent development, and creating awareness to establish brand destination for the ag industry cluster we have. As the map shows, like Silicon Valley nationally is an industry cluster, or if you think Minnesota, the Destination Medical Center is a cluster. As you can see, we're showing that we can compete with other major industry clusters on a national level. People just don't realize it. We currently have guidance, insight, and action from over 50 volunteers, from high tech to professional service to educational institutions, and including Southern Minnesota Initiative Foundation and Minnesota Department of Ag Assistant Commissioner Bailey. Let's jump into some of the work we did this past year, starting with business and community outreach programs. We've provided insight and information to 16 unique groups, from chambers of commerce to economic development organizations and higher education. We've published the fifth State of Ag report. This year, the report will be released on March 18th, which is National Ag Day. And any of you or all of you are welcome to join us, or I can offer to come back and provide and share the findings from this year's report. We support entrepreneurs by bringing workshops to the communities that they live in to reduce the barrier for them to get further education and further support. And we've gotten excellent feedback, and we've continued those workshops in 2025. As you know, businesses, small and large, are challenged with finding talent to grow their business, and we have had global workforce programs and Redwood Falls this past year that had 45 businesses that attended to learn on what options are available. Some other interesting gaps that we've found and we've helped fill is helping out employees when businesses decide to close. And there's many businesses out there that need these individuals, and we took it as our role to make sure the connections happened, which we've seen great success in the one example of Ardent Mills in Mankato. We're also able to support individuals, for example, a small growing flower farmer, and with our help, and she gave us the number that they've increased their production by 40% because of our support. As I mentioned, talent development, talent is a key component of the long-term success of our rural communities and agriculture. This past year, Minnesota State University Mankato officially launched the School of Applied Agriculture, Food, and Natural Resources. And one of the programs that has also been started and launched is an agreement with South Central Community College for Agronomy and Minnesota State University, which is a 2+2 program, and GreenSeam has been at the core of those since the beginning.
Oops. We have about 7 minutes left, Mr. Ziegler, if we could move it along a little bit.
Yep, I'll wrap this up. So in conclusion, GreenSeam's dedicated to ensuring agriculture will fuel economic growth in Minnesota and is committed to developing the region. And with your support, it's a 5-to-1 match. So five private dollars have came with $1 publicly from you. I'm proud to have supporters with me here today, and excited to have them talk about their experiences. We have Wes Beck, who is the chair of the GreenSeam Board, and more importantly, a farmer, as well as Robin Tidd, the ag teacher at Mankato Area Public Schools, and two of her students. And please note that there is information in your packet, and I'd be happy to talk with you more about that. So thank you for allowing me time, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Beck, go ahead.
Mr. Chairman. Thank you for the opportunity to be here in front of you today to share the GreenSeam gospel. I'd like to introduce myself. My name is Wesley Beck, and I'm currently the chairman of the Board of Governors at GreenSeam. GreenSeam is a unique organization. You know, we're here to develop two of Minnesota's greatest natural resources, our people and our agricultural industry. GreenSeam is not trying to duplicate an EDA, and we're certainly not the commodity corporations. But agriculture is served by people on both sides of production agriculture, the vendors that supply farmers with services or goods, and also the labor and the industries on the other side that process those goods into the food chain moving forward. I'm the only farmer on the GreenSeam board, and that gives me a unique perspective, and we need that voice in the boardroom. But more importantly, we're served by people in the financial industry, insurance, agronomy, construction, logistics. On the other side is the processors and providing labor and talent for all of them. Moving forward, one of the most important things we need to realize is that stable industries create stable careers that create stable families. And having a workforce ready to move forward and meet those needs and sustain themselves is part. So this is really what we're doing. You heard Sam talk about the 5-to-1 match. From an accountability standpoint, Commissioner Peterson or his designate has a seat on our board, as well as several higher institutions of learning, such as South Central Technical College and MSU. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Beck. Robin Tidd, agricultural teacher. Go ahead, ma'am.
Thank you, Chair Anderson. Good afternoon, members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today. As said before, my name is Robin Tidd, and I am the FFA advisor and agriculture teacher at Mankato Area Public Schools. I've been in this role for the past 4 years, and in that time, I have witnessed firsthand the impact that Green Seam has had on our agriculture program. This year alone, I've served 241 students through our agriculture program. One of Green Seam's main focus areas is talent development, retention, and attraction. They serve as a regional advocate and coordinator, ensuring that our industry and educational program are aligned. About 6 years ago, Green Seam, along with local businesses, recognized a significant gap. Our school district did not offer an agriculture program, despite agriculture being a vital part of our community. They stepped in, working alongside local businesses in the school district to reintroduce agriculture education into our schools. Green Seam was instrumental in establishing our program. They helped us form our initial advisory board, assisted in finding fundraising opportunities, and connected us with local guest speakers and field trip opportunities. But their support did not stop there. Even as our program became established, Green Seam remained a crucial partner. Just this past spring, I encountered challenges with our greenhouse. Without me even having to ask, Green Seam reached out to a local greenhouse, arranged a visit, and provided the guidance I needed to fix the issue. Without fixing this issue, we may not have been able to host our spring plant sale. This is just one example of how their support continues to strengthen our program. Simply put, our agriculture program would not be where it is today without Green Seam's advocacy and support. I urge you to continue supporting this essential organization so they can keep fostering connections, strengthening agricultural education, and ensuring that students have opportunities to engage with this vital industry. I've brought with two of our FFA members and agriculture students, Delaney and Faith, who will be sharing their experiences through the agriculture program, opportunities that are possible thanks to Green Seam's support. Thank you for your time.
Thanks, Ms. Tidd. Next up, I believe, will be Delaney Kantek. If I'm got that wrong, just say your name for the record and start.
Hello, committee members. My name is Delaney Kantek, and I'm a senior at Mankato West, and I'm the chapter vice president of Mankato FFA. I'm incredibly grateful that Green Seam was able to help establish an FFA chapter in our school district. Through FFA, I have gained valuable opportunities to develop both my leadership skills and career readiness. During my freshman year, I took an Intro to Agriculture, Food, and Natural Resource class, which I got to do a supervised agriculture experience project where I got to shadow different employees at a grain elevator. From that experience, I knew I wanted to go into the agriculture field, which led me to becoming a full-time PSEO student at South Central College, where I am majoring in ag business to pursue a career in agriculture. Over the past 4 years in FFA, I have learned so much from competing in career development events such as ag sales, floriculture, and farm business management. I have also had the chance to compete in employment skills, which is a leadership development event, helping me grow in leadership and communication. With Mankato FFA, we have been able to volunteer and give back into our local communities. I've had the privilege of networking and learning from industry professionals while also building friendships with fellow FFA members. Attending both state and national convention has given me the chance to meet people from all over the country. I cherish the years and memories in FFA, and I want generations to come to have the opportunity to be a part of the FFA family. Thank you for your time.
Delaney, thank you very much. And our last testifier, go ahead, ma'am.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Faith Maceman. I'm a junior at Mankato West High School, the president of our Mankato FFA chapter. Our FFA chapter and our high school agriculture program has impacted my life by helping me find a community full of love and life. The 3 years I've spent in FFA have been the best part of my high school experience, from competing in parliamentary procedure at the state convention to attending nationals as of my sophomore year and getting to meet people around all 50 states. I have created countless cherished memories, and I know that there are many more to come my senior year. FFA found me when I was lost and in need of a community. I had just moved here from overseas after living in Stuttgart, Germany for 7 years with the Army. The advisors told me to join the livestock competition, and I haven't left ever since. From livestock to parliamentary procedure, there's something for everybody within FFA. Since I've joined, I have competed in livestock judging, parliamentary procedure, agricultural sales, and nursery and landscape. I've qualified for parliamentary procedure twice and nursery landscape once, and I will be going to state for this April for agricultural sales. FFA has helped me grow as a leader and helped me know how to handle many different challenges. Throughout high school, I have considered many different career paths within the agricultural field, but after much consideration, I decided to attend college to become a firefighter and to minor in wildlife management so that I can help protect our natural resources and make sure that our beautiful state remains beautiful. FFA has a lasting impact, and that is why many of our chapters and many of our members become alumni through the alumni chapters existing. And through FFA, I have thousands of brothers and sisters that would join me in saying how much of FFA has an impact on our lives. Thank you for your time.
Hey, thank you. Both young ladies, a tremendous, tremendous job, and folks in the Blue Jackets do a wonderful job representing agriculture. No further questions or a little bit over time. Thanks for your patience. With that, again, no meeting on Wednesday because of the training, so we'll see you next Monday. With that, meeting is adjourned.